The Bush administration continues to field questions about the health of Vice President Dick Cheney. Earlier this week, Mr. Cheney underwent angioplasty to reopen an artery to his heart. That procedure was Mr. Cheney's second on the same artery since November. He returned to work shortly after the procedure. He's been battling some kind of heart disease for more than 20 years. Our Dan Shore discussed Mr. Cheney's health with psychiatrist Gerald Post, co-author of the book When Illness Strikes the Leader, and historian Donald Ritchie of the Senate Historical Office.
Let me address you first, Gerald Post, because you've looked into this matter in your book. As I look through history, it really is amazing how many of our presidents, not to mention vice presidents, have managed to conceal serious illness from the public. I mean, it goes back to President Cleveland, who was operated on for cancer and nobody seemed to know. It goes back to Woodrow Wilson, who had a stroke and they announced that he had indigestion. There was, of course, President Kennedy and Addison's disease, which we didn't know. Why do you think it is so important that they try to keep it from us?
Well, we look to our president to be all strong, all powerful, all wise, a figure of strength, and illness can really compromise that image. Moreover, in some of these cases, the president has had the feeling that if his illness was revealed, it could lead to a major political reversal. You mentioned Cleveland as an example. He discovered this growth in the roof of his mouth at the same time that there was a major political crisis brewing over trying to abolish the gold standard and introduce the silver standard. And he was afraid, if it was revealed that he had cancer, that it would lead to an economic crisis. So under the cover of nightfall, they went on to the presidential yacht, and they removed this and totally concealed it from the public. And it wasn't known until 15 years later that it occurred.
Well, Donald Ritchie, what happens when the public finds out that they've not been told the truth?
Since the mid-1950s, since Eisenhower's heart attack in 1955, presidents' health have usually been front-page matters. And to some degree, we're much more attuned to it now. I think Jim Hagerty is the press secretary.
Jim Hagerty, who was President Eisenhower's press secretary.
He felt that you really needed to give the press everything. I remember Lyndon Johnson showing his scar from his gallbladder operation. In part, that was to get away from rumors that his surgery had been for cancer, a much more serious operation. And in part, he was being advised by Hagerty as well, who was talking to his press secretary.
But even though more information does come out, there's nevertheless the ability, with the inner circle in particular, to often conceal the magnitude of the illness. Ronald Reagan is an interesting example. We were all cheered by his visage through the window at George Washington Hospital, but his staff, in fact, was gravely concerned that there would be, as they put it, another Wilson presidency, referring back to the concealment by Wilson of the extremity of his illness, you know.
I think most Americans really don't pay attention to the big issues on a regular basis. When there's a crisis, we pay attention, and the rest of the time we expect the government to function. And when we discover that it's not and that people aren't able to do that, I think that it's a great shock to confidence. Presidents have been very much worried about the effect on the stock markets, on other events where people just aren't sure about leadership is going to be there.
I think it goes deeper than just stock market. I think it has something to do with the psychological relationship with the father figure who is the president and maybe the vice president, no?
Yes, that's very much true. And it's even more threatening when there's a question of emotional instability or psychiatric illness or substance abuse. It's not widely known that JFK, for example, you mentioned his Addison's disease and concealing that, but that he abused amphetamines. It's almost certain that a Dr. Max Jacobson regularly visited the White House and gave him an amphetamine cocktail by injection, which was very stimulating indeed and very dangerous for his health, and flew at family expense out to the Berlin speech where he said, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Ich bin ein Berliner, I was there. Let's talk about Vice President Cheney. In this recent episode, he had pains. Next morning he was on television saying, I feel fine. The next day he was in the hospital. Is there a sense in the case of Cheney that we're not sure that we're getting everything that we usually get in these situations?
Well, in some respects, we're probably getting more than we usually get. You could take a look back to the 1890s when Vice President Garrett Hobart of William McKinley suffered a serious heart condition and just went home to Paterson, New Jersey, and was there for several months and eventually died in Paterson. He's most famous in history now because his death cleared the way for Theodore Roosevelt to become vice president. Much more about president's health was obscured from view in the 19th century, although reporters were aware often of problems, but they just didn't publish that. You didn't write about the private lives of public figures.
And we do have another kind of subtle issue that perhaps is addressed here, which is the need to demonstrate to the public, I am in charge, I am well, you can place your confidence in me. I expect the American public really would have...
Now, normally, we wouldn't say that about a vice president, except we've been told that this vice president is so indispensable.
Right, but don't you think the American public really would have given Vice President Cheney a few days off after a procedure like this? It's really unfortunate
There have also been political leaders who felt they had to carry on with their functions. There have been senators who have been literally carried into the Senate chamber on stretchers to cast a vote because their vote was necessary. One of the key votes in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was cast by Clare Engel, who was suffering from a brain tumor, couldn't speak, had to point to his eye to say "I," but his vote counted. There are often cases in which people do things that perhaps the average person wouldn't consider doing, but they feel it's a responsibility of their office.
You have the last word.
Well, this is such a powerful issue, and I think one of the things to emphasize is that VIPs, in fact, don't necessarily get the best of care. And I'm not criticizing physicians at all because of the complexity of their role. They need to be all wise, all powerful, all strong, and that means they will often deny symptoms. They will often inhibit getting the best treatment possible. And the doctor for the VIP is in a very conflicted relationship. Is he a private individual? Is he treating the official? Is he treating the role? Very complicated, wearing all those hats.
Thank you, Gerald Post, and thank you, Donald Ritchie, which leaves me with only one conclusion. That is, maybe it would be better if Americans understood that even presidents and vice presidents are just human beings. This is Daniel Shore.